Growing up, I didn't go to church on Sunday mornings, but on Friday nights, both my mom and I would sit down and watch movies, and she would show them from a Christian perspective.
Growing up, we were out in the woods, so I didn't watch many movies, but I learned to look around me and find a spiritual lesson in everything I saw.
So now, I want you guys to experience the goodness of God in the movies we watch.
Join us as we unpack meaning from the movies we watch.
I'm movie apologist Clark.
And I'm Bethany.
And this is Movie Night Apologetics.
You're the one making mountains out of molehills.
You're the one that, whatever, okay. Well, what is up, movie? Gosh, dang it. You threw me out of my groove, man.
No, I threw off the Emperor's groove. Sorry.
Made me in a bad mood now.
I'm sorry.
Like, it would make you feel better.
What?
Nothing but the truth.
Shut up.
Sing away the demons, Chico Pie. Mm.
Got a lot of demons in me.
There's demons coming in between us, and we can't let them come between us.
Whatever. All right. Try this again. Well, what is up, movie lovers? Welcome back to the podcast that loves to show you the goodness of God. And we are going to be reviewing this month K-pop Demon Hunters.
Yes.
And we're going to be briefly talking about is K-pop Demon Hunters evil?
Dun, 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 dun.
Dun, dun. But before we get into that, why don't we have the description of the movie by my lovely wife, Bethany. What she usually does.
I am lovely. Thank you for calling me lovely, even though you're angry at me.
We just got in a little tiff.
First take. I ruined the first take of this podcast.
We almost broke up, and then we sang a song to get the band back together.
That is exactly what happened. And I am so glad we didn't let the demons come between us.
All right.
So, in a land that is maybe South Korea, a band called Huntrix is super popular. There are three girls in the band called Rumi, Mira, and Zoe. But they aren't just singing to get famous. Their voices have a power to keep demons away. Their voices combined with the fans' adoration combines to create this sort of barrier they call the Han Moon. And they're close to making the Han Moon strong enough that the demons will never be able to get through to our world again. But the demons come up with a clever strategy.
Ooh, strategy.
They start a boy band to try and steal Huntrix's fans to weaken the Han Moon.
A demon boy band?
Oh yeah, that'll work. One of the demons from the boy band discovers that Rumi has a shameful secret. She, spoiler alert, I mean, the whole world's seen this movie already, right?
Yeah, basically.
She is part demon herself.
Ooh, part demon.
Eventually, Rumi has to face that shame, which is actually the catalyst to restoring the Han Moon and driving the demons back to their world.
Nice. Well, we're going to get into our rating, system, which is water, which is bad, soda, good, slushy, amazing. And I'm going to be honest, like, there is no rating system that we have that can define this movie, because this movie goes above and beyond slushy. This
you know
is
that's
like,
right.
Yes. This is like one of the greatest movies. This is probably in my top five, like, at least animated movies of all time. Like, it's up there with like Emperor's New Groove and Finding Nemo.
Oh, yeah, above that.
You think even above those two?
1,000%. I have watched this movie every day for the last few weeks, and I'm not tired of it. I want to watch it right now instead of podcasting about it.
Well, like, you do like music.
Well, I love that this movie is so funny, and it's surprising, and it's clever, and it's deep. I cry every time that final song plays. It's so good. And there's so much meaning packed into this movie. And the more you look at it, the more you're like, oh my gosh, they hid this in there.
Right. Yeah. It's like every time you watch it, you can find something new to take from it.
Yeah. This is going to be a very easy movie to talk about and relate it back to right. spiritual themes.
Like they're like something that I didn't notice the first time watching it. Like when, you know, what's his name again?
Ginu.
When Ginu sacrifices himself in the end, spoiler alert. This movie's just spoilers, people. So if you've never watched it, sorry to burst your bubble. But when Ginu sacrifices himself at the end, I didn't realize like he gave his soul to Rumi so that way she could be fully human again, if that makes sense.
No, that's not what happened.
That's not what happened. So what was the purpose of him giving her his soul?
Well, can we talk about that later? Because that's one of my themes.
Oh, is it? Okay, fine. We'll talk about that later. So, yeah. Was that your rating of the movie?
So slushy. Yes, more than slushy.
Mine? Yes. I mean, obviously, more than slushy. The movie was fantastic. The music was the best part of it. And I'm going to be talking about an interesting fun fact with that. But, yeah, like you said, I mean... What I love about it is the music went along with like what the movie was about.
Yeah.
And then it was just catchy. It was deep. Like these songs got stuck in my head so much where, usually when you get a song stuck in your head, you're like, oh, I want this song out. I didn't want it out. Like, I was like, yeah. This is good. Ready for a takedown. Yeah. Or I'm going to be your idol or something like that. I can't sing. But, I think my two favorite songs, though, in this movie was the free song.
Golden?
No, not free. Not golden. Free. It was called Free. It was when Ginu and Rumi were singing together.
Oh, I actually forgot about that song.
There's a fly flying around your head.
It's flying freely.
And then obviously the last song, which is what it sounds like.
Yeah.
Such a good song. I really like the harmony in that song and the way. Yeah.
Spine tingling. It's so
good. And then the animation of the movie. So I believe the that one cartoon Spider-Man directors or producers, I'm not sure. But they worked on this movie, and so they made the animation like look comic-y. I really am enjoying that kind of style of animation.
Yes,
because I don't know, like I we've been with the Pixar kind of for like 20 something years, and now in the last few years we've seen this kind of animation. It's just a nice, refreshing way to get animation.
And it seems like they're having fun with it. It felt Looney Tunes-ish. Because, like in the classic Looney Tunes, they were free to do whatever they wanted. They really explored. Like, this is our cartoon.
It's like if the eyes pop out, they'll make them really pop out. And they kind of did that with this movie.
And it's fun. Yeah. It's different. It's creative. I loved it.
Yeah. So the one caveat I'm going to give to this being a great movie, as great as it is, the only thing that I think won't... last in it as much.
I'm so ready to defend it.
Is it the laugh out loud factor after a rewatch is not as up there. Like if you rewatch like Emperor's New Groove is a great example. I always kind of laugh out loud when we rewatch that because the jokes land a lot more. Whereas this one, they do land the first time, but then afterwards it's just like, but then again, we've seen it a lot of times.
We've seen it a lot.
So maybe if I didn't watch it for 10 years and I rewatched it, maybe it would. But I just think the jokes in it don't land quite as well as maybe some other comedies.
I think I see what
you
mean because some of the jokes do kind of rely on the surprise.
Yes. And once you watched it, you're not as surprised anymore.
Right.
It's just kind of like a comedy movie. It's not going to be as funny the second time because you know the joke's coming.
Sure.
So that's kind of my one caveat.
So your one caveat is after watching it 10 times, you're not laughing out loud as much.
Yeah. Well, I'm just saying, I think if I watch this movie like a few years down the road without, you know, watching it and then a few years later pick it up, I don't think I'm going to laugh as much as I did the first time.
Whereas, well, that is a pretty harsh criticism, but I think that's I'll accept that. Yeah.
Right. So, and then, yeah, so that's kind of what I thought about. Those were my thoughts of the movie rating. I was talking to a guy at work and I was like, hey, Kyle, like, you want to know a great movie on Netflix to watch? And he kind of gives me this like, all right. And I'm like, K-pop Demon Hunters. And he's like, ugh. Like, apparently people have been recommending him that movie and talking about that movie. And he did finally watch it. And he's like, yeah, it's pretty good. It was pretty catchy. And so, I mean, it really is. And so, but what I want to get into, because, you know, the title of this podcast is K-pop Demon Hunters Evil. Just briefly, this ain't going to be the whole podcast or anything. But there's been a little bit of controversy behind it because demons is in the title and hunters, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, you and I, we grew up in the era of Harry Potter being evil and witchcraft. And if you watch it, you're going to be like cursed and lose your hair and blah, 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 all that.
We
like,
didn't all think that.
Okay. I thought that. I thought that. Okay. Well, I watched a movie that my mom gave me about Harry Potter and it being evil. And you watched it with me and it was just ridiculous.
It was ridiculous. Yes.
But anyways, there's people. I was watching this YouTube video of this guy. He's, I don't know if he's a theologian or a pastor or just some YouTuber that knows a little bit about the Bible, but he's basically like, you know, the hidden dark truth of K-pop demon hunters. And I was looking through the comments on them and I just want to read a couple, like at least just a couple, but there was actually a few, the one that I wanted to talk about at the end that was actually positive. But this one YouTube comment says, I'm a mother of a 13-year-old. Should I use a Valley Girl voice?
Yeah, Valley Girl.
I'm a mother of a 13-year-old who is relentlessly begging me to let her watch and listen to the music of this show. I have tried to explain its nature and darkness, but she hasn't received it. Until this morning, I showed her this video, the video of the guy that talked about this, and God gave her the understanding. Why? I can't do voices. Okay, I'm sorry. And
and your Valley Girl's from Georgia.
And God and God gave her, I'm just going to speak normally, and God gave her the understanding she needs and opened her eyes to other things like Harry Potter and Majesty. This is why I brought it up. And I thank God for giving you the voice to speak about this. And then another one said, my daughter is okay with being the only one in her friend group not going to the Demon Hunters sing-along and Demon Hunters birthday parties because she can see the movie is so evil and she wants nothing to do with it. She can see how it's demonizing her friends. Thank you, Holy Spirit, for giving her the discernment of spirits. What do you say about these two comments? These are just two, by the way. There was a plethora of them up there that I could have chose from, but I chose those two.
You know, this is going to sound like I am going off topic, but when I was a teenager, I was hanging out with a crowd of people who were kind of the wrong side of the tracks people, you know, from all kinds of backgrounds, really messed up kids, you know, alcoholics, druggies. And I remember a couple times sitting around campfires with all of these what society would call losers, you know, not a very Christian group at all. And they would talk about the strange spiritual things they've seen.
Uh-huh.
They talked about dark powers, about demonic influence, about the paranormal. Like, they had experiences and they didn't discount each other's experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And it is so weird to me that in the Christian sphere, where we believe in a spiritual world, where that's kind of like a huge part of the gig, is we believe that there are good and evil spiritual forces in our world. It's not acceptable in Christian circles to talk about demons.
Yeah, but I'm trying to wonder why it's like Harry Potter off limits, like the K-pop demon hunters off limits. Like, you know, like maybe if we watch something that has a demon in it or portrays a demon in it, like, what is your kid gonna get possessed? Like, I'm trying to understand what's the fear. Mm-hmm. In watching something like it, because no one has a problem with Lord of the Rings. And there's a lot of like ghosts and spiritual demonic stuff in that. Right. I mean, like, so why is it the Harry Potter and the K-pop mm-hmm. demon hunters like get the crap? But, you know, then we go Lord of the Rings. Well, why? Because a Christian wrote it?
Like, that's probably the whole thing. Well, it's all fear, right? I don't think there's any like logical string of steps that you could put together and say this is why people are afraid of K-pop demon hunters.
I mean,
it's just, okay, I see there's a demon in the title and I see them fighting demons. I'm going to assume that this is an evil movie, and if I watch it, I'm going to be influenced by the evil.
It's the same thing that happened with Wicked.
It's called Wicked, so it must be a Wicked
movie.
Yeah,
there was literally pastors saying this must be a Wicked movie because it's called Wicked. And the whole point of the movie was we did a movie podcast on this. And it was like basically looking at the judging by the cover, mm-hmm. but not looking at the actions or the character behind, you know. So you have this person with green skin. And they were like, oh, she's evil and wicked because she has green skin, but not looking at, you know, her character.
Right. It's hugely ironic.
And it's like they're doing the same thing. They're looking at a cover of a movie, a title of a movie with Wicked or K-pop demon hunters, and thinking it's Wicked because there's demon in the title. It's Wicked because it's Wicked in the title.
I know. And it's so funny because in K-pop demon hunters, demons are evil and they are called evil.
Yes, even after.
And they are defeated.
They didn't, at the end there, they didn't sing Kumbaya with the fiery dude. And they're like, yeah, let's accept ourselves and be good. No, they still killed the demons.
Yes.
And they still killed the fiery dude, whatever his name was.
No, they didn't kill Guima.
Well, they got rid of him. They sent him somewhere else. He wasn't there at the end.
He was trapped in the other realm.
He wasn't eating souls at the end, is what I'm trying to say. Yeah. They saved the people from Gimu.
Guima. Our 8-year-old just corrected us.
He's playing Minecraft. We're in that parenting stage where now our oldest is playing Minecraft. And he's probably going to be hooked on it forever now.
I'm okay with that. It beats
for the next 10 years at least. Yeah. And so, like, I almost wonder if this movie was called K-pop Monster Hunters. Mm. If it had that little change, people would be like, oh, yeah, you know, you go watch that. You know what I'm saying? I'm pretty sure.
I'm just so mad right now because I think you're right.
Oh, 100%. It's because it has demon, and in the Bible, there are, you know, demons in the Bible, and so, oh, we can't watch anything with demons in it. But, you know, you'll let your kid watch, you know, something with monsters. Monsters, Inc. I mean, what happens if it was called Demon Inc.? No, boy.
No, we would watch that. You know, it is really funny that all that self-righteousness comes from people who say that they've read the Bible. And, like, do you recall the story of King Eglon and how he died?
You would know that story more than me, so why don't you tell it?
I'm not going to tell it because I think it's so grotesque that we wouldn't be able to air this podcast.
Oh, wow.
And it's really in the Bible.
Yeah.
There's a lot of grotesque stuff in the Bible.
Yeah. And we're like, here, son, read this.
Well, we were always supposed to talk to God about it and think it through and figure out, like, what does this mean? And that's exactly why we're doing this podcast, right?
Right, exactly.
We're not avoiding the movies that are controversial or have themes we disagree with. We're engaging with it. We're thinking through these things.
Yeah, we want to engage with the world. Like, if, I mean, you probably have, I think you told me you grew up with, like, people, or maybe, was it you that's, no, never mind. I was thinking you were the one that said that you grew up with people that, like, had parents that didn't allow them to watch anything that was, like, Disney or anything.
And well, I think everybody knew a family like that. No. I knew a family who wasn't allowed to watch Disney because it was evil. And two of their daughters had babies while they were teens. Well, so it's just clamping down on your kids and making sure they don't watch anything bad ever.
Well,
it really doesn't work as a parenting technique.
Well, it doesn't teach them, like, because eventually, hey, parents, they're going to have to go out in the real world and they're going to watch stuff because, I mean, if you clamp down so hard, guess what they're going to do? They're going to be like, man, I'm free. Like, I can watch whatever I want. I'm going to go watch whatever. Mm-hmm. And then they're going to watch it and then get whatever the world says and not have the tools to discern, like, okay, this is something that's good in it. This is something that can be redeemed in it. And this is something that can be rejected in it. You know, you give them those tools as they grow up rather mm-hmm. than, like, suppress. Because if you keep doing that, they're just not going to have the tools in their tool belt when they grow up and go out of the house.
Right.
Like, they need to be able to learn how to discern what they're taking in.
It's like, it's the exact same reason why my cucumber vines did not do well the first year that I planted cucumbers. When you go into a greenhouse and you see a lot of plant starts, you should notice that there are fans pointed at those little baby plants. Hmm. Why are there fans pointed at the baby plants?
Is so that they learn how to build roots to resist the wind?
Exactly. Because if they are not having to, like, experience problems and develop resistance, when you put them outside and they are finally experiencing the troubles of the earth, they don't have the root system for it.
Right.
So they will die so easily because they're weak.
Yeah. And I do want to make a caveat. Like, obviously, you let your kids watch what's age appropriate.
Yes.
Like, we wouldn't let our son watch a horror movie, a rated R horror movie right now.
No. You know, like, even though he would beg
for, yeah, exactly. Like, it's like, handle. No, let's wait till you're about 15, 16, maybe, mm-hmm. you know, before we do that. But, you know, 8 years old, no, you're not going to do that. Right. So, obviously, caveat, like, be discerning with what you let your kids watch, but just, yeah.
Right. But if a movie has a theme that we don't agree with, like lying to your parents is good, it's not that we wouldn't let him watch it. We would talk about it.
Yeah. And so I wanted to go on this, read the other comment, the good one, because this guy, I don't know, I thought I put his name in there, but this guy said, I hope Christians that watch this film realize that Rumi did not accept being a half demon. Thank you for saying that. She was freed by telling the truth about how she got the patterns. She realized that her mom's sin does not define her. She never sold her soul, nor was she created by Jinma, that Satan. It was the sins of her father that caused her to have those patterns. Example, serial killers have children. Their children being honest about that does not mean they want to be serial killers too, which is a great point. This movie is about idolatry, confirmed by the songwriters, and the truth setting us free, which is biblical. One thing I forgot to add in my original post, this is after he posted that one, Christian parents, it is your responsibility to make the movie to make the movie a teaching moment for your children. Teach them about the wolves in sheep clothing, deception, guilt and shame, Satan, and breakdown, the lyrics for your kids to help them understand why the Saja boys were actually bad guys. Don't let the movie teach your children use the to teach them yourselves. If the right, yeah. So, and then he goes on to say a few other things, but basically, like, have this be a teaching moment for your kids. Mm-hmm. Don't just like shy away from it because it has demon in the title.
Right. It's really good when a situation occurs in a movie that you don't run into in normal life.
Yeah.
Because it gives you the opportunity to talk through something before you approach it in real life.
Well, not only that, but when you engage in these fictional type movies, mm-hmm. you're going to encounter so much more than you would maybe in life. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, so like, yeah, I mean, or you can kind of see some, like, from a character's point of view, what they're going through, and you can, like, talk through about, you know, what they're going through. I don't know. Like, there's a lot of different things you could take away from movies to make you think more.
Yeah.
Than just not watching them.
So. Well, and being in somebody else's shoes really helps you figure out how you would act in different scenarios.
Right.
When you start imagining how you would act mm-hmm. in scenarios, that actually sets you up to act that way.
Yes.
If it actually happens.
Yeah. So, like, for example, it's like Rumi. I don't know if I put these in my notes for later on, but anyways, this is a great talking point. But she hid her shame. She hid her, like, demon patterns, and then everything blew up because her friends found out before she told them. You know, what happens if she would have, I don't know, at like a younger age or something, confronted her friends or years before this happened and sat them down and said, you know, I'm a half demon because my father was a half demon.
Right.
And she sat them down and said that, they probably would have bonded more rather than just finding out. And so you can kind of walk through that or walk through, you know, the mother and her wanting to hide Rumi's patterns. And, you know, so like, what could the mother have done better to help Rumi with that shame?
And by
her
mother, you mean her aunt.
Oh, that's her aunt.
Her mother died. She was one of the Sunshine Girls.
Oh.
It's part of the lore.
Okay, well, I guess I wasn't paying attention that much.
You need to watch it 10 more times.
Yeah, probably. Okay, well, let's get into the fun facts of the movie. So I want to hear, I hope you didn't choose the same fun facts as me, but
I have extras.
Okay, well, that's good.
So one of the things I love about this movie is all of the hidden meanings, like I've said before.
What about the fun facts?
This is a fun fact.
Oh, okay.
About the hidden meaning.
Oh, got ya.
So, fun fact. The song Golden,
mm-hmm.
it's all about how they're no longer hiding and this is who they really are.
Okay.
And Rumi is having trouble singing the song.
Mm.
And if you listen carefully, this is all over like the Reddit forums. The song Golden is not in the correct vocal range for Rumi's voice.
Oh.
So even when she's singing the song Golden, she's trying to be something she's not.
Mm. Is that even, like, if I were to put it on Spotify, would I be able to hear it?
Or is it just in the movie? Well, yeah, it's still the same voice. But if you listen carefully, I believe she's an alto and Golden is supposed to be sung by a soprano. So she's pushing.
What the heck's an alto and a soprano?
That means like the high notes, the highest notes that you can reach.
Oh, okay.
So you can hear it. You can hear her straining her voice.
So I'm assuming if you're a singer or you know a little bit about music, you would probably be able to pick that up.
Yeah.
And be like, oh, wow.
Yeah, a lot of people did.
Oh, okay. Because me, like, I listen to music, but I'm no music major or anything, so
right.
I wouldn't have picked that up.
Well, here's one that a music person wouldn't pick up, but somebody who speaks Latin will.
Hmm.
I only just found out about this. So the final song, Idol,
mm-hmm.
at the beginning of the song, they're saying like...
Hish, hosh, hish, like that part.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're actually saying Latin words.
Uh-huh.
And if you translate them... Those Latin words put together say,
the day of wrath that will return you to ashes.
Oh, wow.
Cursed master in flames for eternity.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, that's why they didn't say it in English.
Yeah, eternal damnation. Sounds fun.
Wow. That's a pretty good one. So mine is, I mean, it's not as cool as that, but it took 7 years to make this film. Like, could you imagine, like, working on anything and it being, I mean, that's like when Carver was 1 year old, they were working on this.
That is wild. Yeah.
But, I mean, this movie will go down in history as, like, I firmly believe it's going to be a classic 20 years from now.
Oh, like, yeah.
There's no way it can't.
I mean, like, Alora's been singing the songs all over the house.
Like, yeah, this will be a classic. This will be in the top 100 movies.
I know I'm going to have to rewatch it at least once a year after I finish watching it over and over again for the first year.
Right.
My other fun fact is the girl who came up with the idea of this movie, Maggie Kang.
Mm-hmm.
She was inspired by traditional Korean mudong dancers,
mm-hmm.
who were women in ancient Korean society who would perform these protective rituals by singing and dancing around their village.
Uh-huh.
They believed that by doing songs and dances around their village, they were helping protect it.
Okay. So that's what kind of inspired the plot of the movie, of like singing, it will make the Hun Moon stronger for the demons not to get out.
Right. Yeah. Right. I think she was able to tie in the visual with what the Mudong dancers maybe thought they were doing.
Oh, interesting. So the other one, my last fun fact is the songs that were written, they were written without the specific movie scenes in mind.
Mm.
So all those music, like, the movie formed around the music. The music did not form around the movie.
Cool.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it kind of, like, made me think of, like, people who write sermons or whatnot. It's like, is your sermon, like, no, if you're, like, because both you and I have written sermons before. Like, is your sermon focused, like, is your, like, what you're writing about focused around scripture, is scripture focused around what you're writing about?
Oh,
and that's
yeah.
kind of what yeah. it may, and some of, like, the great sermons that you have are the ones that are focused around scripture, not scripture focused around what you have to say.
Yes.
And I just thought, like, this movie was the exact same way. Like, the songs made this movie. Obviously this movie wouldn't have been near as great if there wasn't the music behind it.
Right. But I am glad that they didn't do the musical movie numbers where they're just, like, talking and then they kind of descend into song.
Yeah.
Because you can't really just sing those in any context.
Uh-uh.
Because you're not in a little town in a quiet village.
Right.
But everybody can relate to, given the throne, I don't know how to believe that I was the queen I'm meant to be.
All right. Well, those are our fun movie facts. And now we're going to go on to the scenes and the themes of the movie. And so I'm really curious what scenes are going to pull up. And I only wrote one scene down because I forgot about the other. So,
okay. Well, if only you could remember the other ones. So one scene is during the last song, when Jinu says that he gives Rumi his soul.
Mm. Okay, so this is what you were saying earlier about how you have this in the notes.
Yes, I have this in the notes. So after Jinu says, hey, you freed me, I have my soul back and I give it to you. And then you see as she's singing, as the band is singing, there's this blue light lighting up in people's chests.
Right, so they're like souls are coming to life.
Yes.
Right.
And as their souls are coming to life, they go forward to Rumi. And there's these blue lights swirling around her as though their souls are swirling around her, helping her, protecting her, something.
they're somehow helping her fight Gi Ma. And it made me think of that verse about how we're surrounded by a cloud of witnesses, which is in Hebrews 12, right after the chapter about all the people of faith who came before.
Right.
And it says, you know, therefore, since we're surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles. And let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us.
And she did literally run.
She was literally running, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of our faith. For the joy set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. I like that verse fits the scene perfectly. And I've always wondered what it meant to be surrounded by a cloud of witnesses. But I like that image a lot of it's like this soul power, this light that you can't see, but it's surrounding you. And it's the people who came before you who lived lives of great faith. And they're saying, go forward, brother. Go forward, sister.
You have a funny story about go forward, brother.
I do. Do you want me to tell it?
Yeah, sure. Why not?
So our oldest son has this electric Bronco that grandma bought him. And we like driving the electric Bronco down to daycare to drop the little kids off. And then we drive it back up the hill to our house. And we were doing that one day. And there was a bunch of elementary kids standing in the sidewalk waiting to cross the street to go to school. And so Carver stopped his Bronco because he couldn't get past them on the sidewalk. And a little girl said, hey, did it stop working? Do you need help? And she tried to grab his steering wheel. And this boy that's maybe 9 or 10 said, hey, let the man do his thing. And then I asked the kids to move off the sidewalk so Carver could get past. And that same kid said, go forward, brother. I just love that.
Go forward, brother. Like, yeah, we live in Potlatch, all right. So one of the scenes that I chose is actually at the start of the movie, where the gal says, probably the aunt, I'm assuming now, not the mom.
Yes.
She said that you are not just pop stars, but also hunters. And I really like that because it's kind of, it is profound in a way, because often as Christians, we feel like our mission is to love God. And often we think of that, equating that of loving God more than the people around us. And I've just kind of had my eyes open lately about things. And you were telling me this last week that your sister Emmy sent you a sermon her pastor gave, and he said something along the lines of, imagine if you got paid a dollar for every interaction with the people around you, how much money would you make this week? And then he said, imagine if you got paid a dollar for every interaction you had with Jesus, how much money would you make? And I, you know, it's just kind of like the shaming of like, well, you need to like be with God more than you need to be with people. And like, you know, and I understand kind of what they're saying, but it's like, you know, the pastor was saying, you know, you should spend more time with God than people. And it's like, I'm just thinking, no, that like Jesus says, you know, here's the first greatest commandment, you know, love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength. And the second is like it, to love your neighbor as yourself. And I think sometimes we get put into this place of, you know, do I either love God or do I love people? Well, no, it's both and. Mm. Like, just same with the K-pop demon hunters. Like, well, do I sing songs or do I hunt demons? Well, no, it's a both and. You sing the songs and you hunt demons, right? Because if you just hunt demons, you're like, that Hun Moon ain't going to stay strong. And all those demons are going to come out and like kill a bunch of people.
Yeah.
And if you just sing songs, well, then there's going to be a few demons that get out that kill people. So you have to do a both and in this. You really, like with us, with living as Christians, like it's loving God and loving people. Like if you are loving people, you are loving God.
Peter, do you love me? Feed my sheep.
Yes, exactly. Peter, do you love me? Well, then pray to me 5 hours a day. Do you love me? Well, then go read the Torah for 6 hours.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Peter, do you love me? Sit on a pole and remove yourself from humanity.
Peter, do you love me? Well, then go in a closet and do a prayer retreat for 2 hours. No, he said, feed my sheep. Mm. Like, love the people. Like, we love God by loving people. Like, the K-pop stars, they loved people by singing songs and hunting demons.
That's right. That's right. It was both.
Right. They needed to do both. So when, like, if you're having a pastor say, well, you know, it's, you know, how much interaction have you had with people? How much interaction have you had with God? Well, you know, I'm sorry, but like, honestly, I've watched way more Netflix this week than I've prayed. I've watched way more Netflix this week than I've read my Bible. I've gone to the bathroom more times than I've interacted with God. I've eaten, you know, food and interact with my, like, you just can't do that. Mm. Like,
but I mean, in him, like, we move and breathe and have our being. Like, we know that we are never apart from him.
Right.
So we don't have to prove anything, right?
Well, and truth be told, I mean, we really can't.
Yeah, yeah. That's
true. Because, like, we fall short. And, you know, it's by his grace and his mercy anyway. So, and because he's a kind, loving God. So you can't do enough. If you pray 24 hours a day and read your Bible 24 hours a day, well, you're missing the mark, because then you're not loving the people that God commanded you to love.
Yeah, you're just filling your head.
Yeah, yeah. So anyways, that, like, when she said that, I'm like, okay. And, you know, I've definitely, and keep this as another mind too, is in the Ten Commandments, if you want to get all statistical numbers, right? Like, four of the commandments were about loving God. Mm-hmm. Six of them were about people.
Mm.
On, you know, so, you know, don't lie, don't steal, don't cheat, don't covet. Like, all those were about your interactions with people. And then, you know, don't disobey the Sabbath, or don't, you know, keep the Sabbath, don't take God's name in vain, don't have God's above me, that sort of thing. Those were about God.
Yeah.
But then the other six were about interactions with day-to-day people. So God had more commandments about interacting with people than God. So I'm just throwing that out there. I'm not saying that they're more important. The first important one is loving God.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you do that. If you do love God, you're naturally going to love people. That's just how it goes.
Yeah. Yeah, that's totally true. Because you start seeing them all as reflections of God, image bearers, people with purpose.
Yes. Yeah. So,
okay. My other scene is right before they're singing the song Idol.
Mm-hmm.
And the band has broken up and they're wandering around, and they accidentally step on these little scepters, and Gima's voice comes out of them, and he speaks to their secret fear to keep them separate.
Mm-hmm.
So he says to Mira, you don't deserve a family.
Mm.
So she walks away from Zoe because she hears that voice. I don't deserve a family.
Right.
And when Mira does that, Zoe hears Gima's voice, and he tells her, you are not enough and you are too much. Mm. So she doesn't go after Mira.
Oh, because she thinks she's too much, and that's why what's her face is walking away.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I just thought it was a really, really good depiction of how we operate and how demons operate in our lives.
Mm.
Because the lie that I believed for a very long time, and I sometimes do, but really not as much as I used to, is you are alone. You will always be alone. And guess what happened when I listened to that lie?
You
stayed alone.
Stayed alone. I'm alone, so I'm not going to interact with anyone. That's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah, yeah, it is. And I mean, that's true of all of those lies, is they're really good at keeping you isolated.
Right.
Silent.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's one of the things that I mean when I say this movie is so deep and I can watch it over and over again.
Yeah.
Is because like that whole scene is just so true to what I've seen in my life.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I like that. So now we're going to go on to the themes of this movie. And you want to start off with the first theme that you saw?
Well, you just went. I mean, I just went.
So well, that's true. Well, I usually have a scene and then you would have the theme. But I didn't choose a second scene because I'm a dodo head. And yeah, I forgot about that. So I can go, but then you're going to have to. Yeah. Okay. So, and you may get a little agitated with this, but just bear with me. One of the themes, obviously, is false teaching and the need to discern everything, even music. So as we see, the Sawjaw Boys were very much like false teachers or false musicians, if you will. Like, even that song, like, as catchy as it was, like, the Soda Pop song, mm-hmm. like, oh, I don't know the lyrics to it. It was like, let me be your soda pop. I'm going to drink you up and feel. Oh, you have it?
I have the lyrics.
What is it? I'm empty, you feed me, so refreshing, my little soda pop. Like, basically, they're saying, like, hey, crowd, like, we're going to just drink you up and, like, drink up your souls, basically.
Yeah, they weren't saying anything false, really. They did plan to devour them.
Yeah, yeah, but it was, like, out of this, like, catchy, like, little tune, and it was catchy. I mean, even the three girls were like, so infectious. it was really good. But, you know, looking at this, and this is why we watch movies and do all this, it's like whether it's fiction, movies, music, you know, even the teaching at your church, you know, just kind of what I talked about a few minutes ago, your favorite Bible teacher, you can't just mindlessly accept the message of whatever medium you are consuming. Like literally before we started this podcast, I was reading from this author who basically said that if a woman did not pursue marriage and didn't get married, like they were aligning with Satan and his plans based off of like one verse in Timothy. And it's like, people, like, we need to, like, discern because, I mean, this is...
But, like, the thing is, I don't know how to do that because I've only just now started really dissecting things that I believe for a long time or things I've heard for a long time and not question. One of those being, sin means you missed the mark.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. Like, I've heard so many evangelical pastors say that.
Right.
It just means you missed the mark. Which...
What?
Sure. Okay, it means that. And sometimes sin is missing the mark, right?
Yeah.
Lying when you should have told the truth. But sometimes sin is murdering somebody in cold blood because you want what they have.
Or you just don't like them and you murder them. Yeah, it could yeah. be for a plethora of reasons why you murdered them.
Yeah, it's that's not exactly missing the mark. That's evil. That's sin.
Right. Like, yeah.
And... calling it missing the mark, I never realized before in all the years of listening to that, wow, does it downplay what the victims are going through?
Yeah. Well, you know, Sasha, you just, I mean, you came out of an abusive relationship. We got to remember, Johnny Boy over here just missed the mark. He may have been beating you, but he missed the mark.
Listen, I know that Johnny burned down your entire house. Including your favorite cat. But what he did was he missed the mark.
Now, little Cindy Lou Who, I know your mom just like put a bag of puppies in the pond and she just missed the mark.
So, and yeah, like now it's so clear to me. Oh my gosh, why did I think that? But how can we be discerning when there's people in our lives who we call teacher? And I know Jesus said never call anybody teacher, but we have people we call teacher. How do we know what's true?
Right. What's true? I mean, again, I look at the fruit of the Spirit, look at God's word. And, you know, that could be hard, right? Because we're dealing with a interpretation of a manuscript. Like the Bible that we read, ESV, NIV, NLT, whatever translation you have, it is like in some form an interpretation of the manuscripts of it. Like, again, I'm no Bible scholar. I don't know this stuff, but I do know we're not reading from the original, like, source. Like, there is some, I mean, you know a little bit about the KJV and how people say, well, the KJV is the best version. And you're like, no, we have better Bible translations. But that, just because it's better, doesn't make it like.
Yeah. Well, our modern translations are pretty good.
Yeah.
Like, they are pretty accurate. I don't think that's usually the problem. I do believe that there would be less confusion if more people knew the Bible from beginning to end.
Yeah.
I started reading the Bible through every year, once a year, back in 2019.
Yeah.
So I've read the Bible through like 5 times now. And it really transforms your understanding because you start connecting things from the beginning and the end.
You're right.
That you would never have connected. So I do think biblical literacy matters. But it still doesn't mean that you can see through things.
No, but I mean, the English, what we read in English is good, but it's still like when you read English, sometimes we can miss.
Okay, you're changing the subject again, though.
How am I changing the subject?
What I'm saying is, how do you know when a false teacher is leading you away from the truth? Because they can use scripture that is properly translated to lead you away from the truth.
Right.
Like,
reading context.
Wives, be submissive to your husbands.
Right. But reading context.
Yes.
And look, I mean, if you can, look at the original Greek and what it says, right? What?
That seems a bit much.
It does, but looking at the original Greek actually can help a lot. And I'll give you a specific example, right? And I mean, not that there's been a lot of controversy around these verses at the end of John, where Jesus is talking with Peter after Jesus makes the disciples breakfast, right? Mm-hmm. Because, you know, Jesus says, you know, Peter, do you love me? Peter, do you love me? Peter, do you love me? 3 times, right? Well, in English, you look at that and it's like, why is he saying love 3 times, right? And in each time Peter's like, you know, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. Well, if you look at the original Greek, there's a couple different words for Greek for love. There's I can't pronounce it right. Fiole love? Flamignon love?
Phileo.
And then there is agape. Jesus was saying, do you agape me? Peter goes, what is it again?
Phileo.
Phileo you. Jesus says, do you agape me? Peter says, I phileo you. And then, shut up. And then Jesus says, do you follow me? And Peter says, you know, Lord, I follow you. You get one thing.
I just always dreamed of having this moment where you would look me in the eyes and say, I follow you.
But looking at that in the Greek, it opens like the door of like what Jesus is doing there. Like, because Jesus went to Peter's level, where he was at with his love for Jesus, and he met him where he was at, even though, and then Jesus again reiterates after that, he's like, one day you are going to agape me, because he states that Peter's going to die for the cause of Christ. Mm-hmm. So one day he is going to sacrificially love Jesus, but right now he's only in the romantic kind of philly love towards Jesus. But Jesus at that moment didn't condemn him. He met him where he was at. And so it takes that whole passage, because you understand the original Greek in it. And so when you're looking at these like really controversial passages, like, you know, women's wives submit, you know, like, look at the original Greek. And
okay, I'll accept your point about Greek, but I think it has to go one step further. I really think we need to stop calling people teachers. And
well, so what are we doing?
we're not.
When people are listening, we're teaching.
Right. But it's not taught. Like we're not saying you have to believe everything we say because no, we're authorities.
Right.
There are a lot of people out there who claim to be authorities.
Right. Yeah.
And basically, we should only call Jesus right. our teacher.
Well, and to extend on that point, what you're saying is the people who say, if you don't believe the words I'm saying are true, then you don't believe God.
Yeah.
If that's the case, then yeah, don't even listen to them.
We have no fathers in the Christian hierarchy. There is no such thing as a Christian hierarchy. We only have brothers and sisters.
Yeah.
We are all equals. We are all on equal footing in our approach to God. Mm-hmm. There is nobody that is on a higher plane. And as long as we believe that, that there are these celebrities who have more access to God than we do, who have more knowledge of God than we can have.
Yeah.
We're not going
to
grow.
Yeah. And so, yeah, if you listen to people like, hey, we have the answers, but if you disobey us or if you, you know, whatever, if you don't believe what we're teaching and, you know, then you're not like, and that's where I think like you have to go back to the Bible and you look and you read like Paul praised the Bereans for looking at the scriptures. You know, Paul didn't go like, you do know I'm an apostle, right? Like, you should listen to me because God sent me. No, he praised them for looking at the scriptures and making sure what Paul was saying was true.
Yeah.
And so even Paul himself, he would say stuff like, you know, if an angel or even I like give you a false gospel, like let him be accursed. Like he mentioned himself in the teaching, like if I give a false teaching, like may I be condemned.
Yeah.
And so like Paul wasn't the, if you don't believe me, you don't believe God kind of deal. He's like, you know, he did teach, but he also knew that.
What were we talking about?
Well, we're talking about false teaching and the need to discern everything with music, with movies, pastors. I mean, my eyes have been opened with pastors this last month or two because I've been listening to the Bear Marriage podcast. And
that's been life-changing for us. Listen to the Bear Marriage podcast. Yeah,
I tell you what, like there have been three, I want to say, podcasts that have changed my life. Dave Ramsey with Money, Gavin Ortland's podcast, Truth Unites, about like first, secondary, tertiary issues. That changed my life. And then this one with about marriage. Like that one radically changed me. And they talk a lot about like Christian books, Christian marriage books in it. And just some of the stuff that these people say about marriage and about, it's just horrific. Like yeah. My eyes have been open.
And by these people, you mean the popular Christian authors?
Yes. Popular Christian authors, pastors even that have talked about, you know, abuse in marriage. Like basically there are pastors that believe like, this is straight from John Piper, someone who I used to be really admire. You would know.
I used to admire him too. But yeah, you kind of worshiped him.
Yeah, I kind of, yeah, in a unhealthy way. Like I was one of those people who was like, oh, whatever he says is straight from God, basically.
Yeah.
And I mean, he said stuff like, you know, it would be good for even if an abusive wife stayed in an abusive marriage and got killed, well, she would be glorifying God because she did not break the marriage covenant. And it's like, are you serious? You're saying this crap? Like, I used to have so much respect for pastors, and I honestly, the last couple months, I look through a lens way differently now. Like, I really, when I read stuff, when I listen to stuff, I really put on my discerning listening bells, and I don't take things with a grain of salt I take things with a grain of salt now. I don't just take them at face value and be like, oh, I'm going to follow that. Like, I have to logically think through.
Right. Because when you see a couple pastors like
seriously get screwed up in their theology and their practical teaching, you start remembering, oh my gosh, these are just normal people.
Yeah.
These are just normal people with a platform.
Yeah. And basically, they're me, regular guy, that just got a degree and has a lot more of a following. I mean, that's really it. Like, you know, the whole ordained by God thing, I really don't understand. Like, I'm sorry, I don't understand it, because
people only have the authority we give them.
Exactly. So anyways, I know we're kind of going off topic away from the movie, but basically one of the themes in this movie is false teaching and people like following that false teaching. And, you know, we just have to be discerning. And again, I don't have a clear cut answer on how to do that for you. But yeah. Right. So.
Well, I just wanted to pressure you past Greek lexicology. Okay. So a major theme in this movie is the spiritual world.
Oh,
and
yeah.
How connected it is with our material world.
Oh, yeah.
It was so cool the way that the band members, Rumi, Mira, and Zoe, they could see the spiritual world.
But the others couldn't. Like the one.
Like Bobby.
Yeah, Bobby. He's like, oh. He's like, we're down a few Instagram followings. Like, ah, it's not the end of the world, though. And they see, like, all this, like, fire up in the city. And
right. They're all, like, scowling because it is the end of the world. That reminded me of the passage in 2 Kings where Elisha is talking to his servant because, like, horses and chariots have completely surrounded the city that they're in. And the servant is freaking out. He says, like, what are we going to do? And Elisha says, don't be afraid. Those who are with us are more than those who are with them.
Mm.
And then he prays, open his eyes, Lord, that he may see. And then the servant looked and he saw the hills full of horses and chariots of fire all around Elisha. The Bible also says our fight is not against flesh and blood, right? It's against principalities. It's about the spirit, against the spirits of darkness. And I find it so interesting that in the movie, the girls' weapons, when they're fighting the demons, they appear out of nowhere because they're not physical weapons. They're spiritual weapons.
Right. Like no one could see them.
Yeah.
See, this is why you need the computer and not the pages, because you couldn't lose your stuff on the computer.
Right. The verse, what it says word for word is, we are not fighting against flesh and blood enemies, but against evil rulers and authorities of the unseen world. There's a lot of unseen world in this movie, right? Like, they're all pressing against that.
Right, even in the opening scene, like, they're down underneath, like, the street. And, like, while people are walking.
Right.
With the home moon protecting them from escaping.
And they have no idea they're being protected.
Right.
Against mighty powers in this dark world. And against evil spirits in the heavenly places. We've seen a lot of conflict and controversy this last month. A lot of people yelling about whose fault the state of the world is. You know, like, whose fault is it? Why is there violence? Why is there trouble?
Right.
And the answer isn't this group or that group or this one person or that one person. It's the spirits of darkness that want us to be in conflict with each other.
Right. Yeah. So getting to, like, going with that point, but what you said earlier about, like, you know, watering, like, sin down, like, missing the mark, and we just call it, like, where does it become, like, because, you know, if I look at someone doing an act of evil, right, like, they did the evil. Like, I'm not going to say, well, the principalities made them do that. Well, no, like, it's their own active free will that they chose to do that. Like, sure, they may have been influenced by demons or, you know, whatever, at the principalities, but, like, they did that.
Well,
like,
exactly.
Yeah. Right.
There's an influence.
Yes.
And some people listen and some people don't.
Right.
And some people pray against it. And some people seek out the light.
Right. And, you know, like, some people are, you know, I've known people be like, well, you know, the demon made them do that.
No, they don't make you do anything.
Right.
I'm pretty familiar with demonic oppression through the guise of mental illness. Like, it's a funny old thing. Like, when people go crazy and they start hearing voices, the voices never say, go pick daisies and throw them out over a crowd of children. Or,
hey, go help a homeless person. They're always like acts of destruction.
Always, which should kind of be an indicator that these are demonic forces that want to do you ill. And I think that mental illness, like, it is a real physical problem in your brain. But
Whoa. There are famous pastors that said there's no such thing as mental illness. Like,
I call no one teacher.
There are forces, something.
Okay. So it's a real problem, right? It's an actual problem, mental illnesses. But I think it opens you up to more influence of the demons, because of the things that mentally ill people have told me that the voices told them to do.
Yeah.
Which it never is a kind, gentle thing. And trying to convince a mentally ill person, well, you shouldn't do that. Oh, you shouldn't listen to that. Like, it's ridiculous. That's not going to work. You can't do it that way. And, like, I don't have a perfect answer to that, but I think that there is a lot that should be explored within the realm of light and love. Because, so my mom has been mentally ill all my life, like horribly mentally ill, listened to a lot of demons in her time, done some nasty stuff. And from an early age, I had to figure out how to manipulate her into not doing those things. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I figured out was being kind to her helped a lot. Listening to her, affirming her.
That helped?
Yes. Yeah, I actually, she was having an episode in the middle of downtown Portland, and I didn't know what to do. So I was just like, I was hugging her and I was telling her how wonderful she was and how hard she was trying to do things. And like, I could see that. And I had this bracelet on my ankle that a friend from Canada had sent me. And I took it off my ankle and I put it on her wrist and I said, this is a really special wish bracelet that my friend gave me, and I want you to have it because it's so special. And she actually calmed down to the point where she could drive out of Portland without finishing the fit.
Do you regret giving that to her?
A little bit. It was a cool bracelet.
I was going to say, it sounds pretty cool. I gave away, when I worked at the summer camp like 12 years ago, I had this cool like nice like silver necklace with like a little shoe charm on it. Mm-hmm. And I gave it to this guy that I became friends with, and he gave me like a Catholic cross or whatever. But we, you know, kind of like obviously lost connection with each other because he lives on the other side of Washington. But it's like, I kind of look back, I'm like, man, why did I give that away? That was cool. Like, I had it for a couple years at that point, and it was mm-hmm. like, I was a runner at the time. I'm like, man, I wish I wouldn't have given that away.
But yeah, I think my point is, rather than trying to oppose people, try to awaken that soul within them. Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. Rather than just always condemning and judging and saying, like, you're doing this wrong, this, and this wrong. I mean, there, like, not to be, I mean, there are times to do that. Because, certainly. Like, yeah, because, you know, I've been listening to Bear Marriage podcasts, and, boy, if I wasn't an egalitarian before that, listening to that, I am totally now. But one of the things that they said was, you know, this whole, like, idea of complementarianism, and, like, women have to be submissive. You can't really, like, be authoritative and, you know, be directive and, like, give your... You know, like if you're the woman giving your husband, like, you know, what's it called? Like a directive command or ask or something. And you have to be kind of like, oh, well, I would do this. I would turn, you know, if I were you, I would turn here. If, you know, say if you like missed a stop where you're trying to get to a party and the wife like can't be directive in these kind of circles. And she has to kind of be like, well, I would have done this rather than just say you miss a turn, you know, like, you know, if I'm doing something wrong, I should be man enough for you to say, hey, that hurt me. Mm-hmm. Please don't do that again. Rather than you say, well, honey, you know, and do, like I should be able to take what you say. And so there are times where we need to be directive, but there are also times where we need to encourage. And the Bible has a lot to say with encouraging people, because I don't think this world gets enough encouragement. Mm-mm. You know,
no.
You know, it's always, and especially from Christians, especially from Reformed Christian people. Okay, I'm talking to you who are Reformed, and you go listen to these wackadoodles of
I'm
pastors.
I'm part of a really cool movement on TikTok called the Kindness Mob.
I do, yeah. Wait, yeah.
Yeah, I love the idea behind it. Every day, the Kindness Mob chooses one person on TikTok to encourage. So they're the user is never tagged in the video, so they don't know what's going on. There's this one guy who says, okay, here's who we're picking today, here's their story, I want you to go to this video that they posted and be kind to them,
like say, man, awesome job with that video, or yeah, something like that. Yeah,
or get really specific because you watch the video, you understand the content, and you can interact with it.
Yeah.
And so all of a sudden, these people with no followers will get 300 comments of kindness on their video. And it is so beautiful. I'm tearing up because I have seen the users react to it. Mm-hmm. There was this one homeless guy who was, he did this video of him standing by a road. Everybody's driving past him, not even looking him in the eye. And he says, you know, if all these people just gave me a quarter, I could go home. Hmm. And the Kindness Mob got him, you know, with all their comments. And one girl in the Kindness Mob actually recognized the part of the city he was in. And she was in the same city. And she went to him personally and talked to him. Hmm. Like, oh, that's, it's beautiful. Like, that's so gospel-ish, you know?
Right. Yeah. I mean, that kind of thing is amazing. Unlike, you know, some of these Reformed people.
Okay,
always.
Okay, settle down.
What? I'm just, sorry. I just.
You're not being very kind.
There's a time to be kind and there's a time to be direct. And this is one of those times where I.
You're being direct to who?
The Reformed people.
Oh, Reformed, those people.
The Reformed. My.
Them.
My. Moderate. I don't know the word. My, you know, when people talk about college, and that was my own Hermana, like
alma mater?
Alma mater? I don't know. Like, you say this weird thing, and it's like you're saying, like, that's my posse, basically.
Okay.
I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, they were your posse.
Anyways, all right. Well, let's get on to the last. Did you have one more theme?
I do have another theme. Do you have another theme?
Yeah, I do. We're getting pretty late. We're already at like an hour and 10.
Well, because this is so good.
This movie is so good. Like, it is really good.
We can keep going.
Okay. So,
I allow us.
My last theme is obviously overcoming our darkness, like i.e. shame, sin, regret, by bringing to the light through the confession to one another. Like, obviously, Rumi probably would have done a lot better if she just sat down with her roommates and discussed rather than them finding out about her past.
Right.
Right. So it's always good, you know, looking at this, like, confession is always good. I mean, that's why the Bible doesn't, and to be honest about it. Like, if you mess up, just be straight up. Yeah, I messed up and I'm sorry. And, you know, like, there's things like I've done to you, like bringing up, what was it?
The budget.
I brought up
the budget while I was on my way to the bank to add more money because I didn't have enough to do payroll.
Well, anyways, I even at the time I knew, but I was like so worried and anxious. And then I, you know, had a moment. And I'm like, I shouldn't have brought that up. You know, like my bad. Mm-hmm. Right. And just saying that, like, I mean, I'm assuming with me saying that, it at least decreased frustration a little bit.
It diffused me a little bit.
Diffused it a little bit. Rather, it diffused it way more than if I would have said, well, you should be worrying about this right now. You know, like that.
Yeah, I might not have driven back.
So what I'm saying is, like, confession, whether like you did something or whether something happened to you that was out of your control is always good. Like talking about things like is always good, mm-hmm. and bringing it up with people. And yeah. So, I mean, that was another theme that I picked up that, you know, we need to have. So
agreed.
Agreed. So what's your last theme before we sign off and roll the credits here?
Let me read some lyrics from This Is What It Sounds Like. Nothing but the truth now. Nothing but the proof of what I am. The worst of what I came from. Patterns I'm ashamed of. Things I even don't understand. I tried to fix it. I tried to fight it. My head was twisted. My heart divided. My lies all collided. I don't know why I didn't trust you to be on my side. I feel like I don't even need to like pick this apart. This song is so good. The lyrics are so good. The idea of having a secret shame that you're trying to fix. Mm. And for some reason, whenever you're trying to fix it, it always gets worse. Mm-hmm. Man, that's so true.
It's kind of like you have an inside wound, mm-hmm. that you're trying to cure through ibuprofen or something. Like, say if you have an internal wound, like only a doctor can fix that, right? They have, mm-hmm. the tools and the surgical procedures to help, like, fix that, right? Yeah. And that, I mean, that's what, you know, what I just said, like other people can help you, mm-hmm. but you can't help yourself.
Yeah. I've used this example a lot, but when I first became a Christian, my mentor told me I needed to work on my tone of voice because my tone was very bitter. So I always tried to like listen to my tone as I spoke, and then I try to modulate it. Like, oh gosh, it still sounds bitter. How do I fix that? And it took a while for me to figure out that I was getting worse and worse. My tone was getting more and more bitter, trying to fix my bitter tone because it made me bitter that I couldn't fix it. The problem was actually I was bitter. And you can't fix your bitter tone without fixing the bitterness in your heart.
Wow. How did you fix it?
Well, I don't know that I fixed it. Yeah. But talking out a lot of my problems, praying out a lot of those problems, like praying for healing, that all contributed. I went through a lot of healing.
Yeah.
And I don't get that comment anymore, that I don't hear people say, you sound really bitter.
Well, lately you've kind of sounded
I don't think I sound bitter. I think I sound cynical.
Cynical, yeah.
Yeah.
I guess there's a difference between cynical and bitterness.
Yeah, I'm not bitter. It's just that I've lost my trust in all people. I feel like that's different.
Sorry, honey, but I don't trust you anymore because you are all people. Or you're included in all people.
You're not included in all people.
Well, you said all people.
You're my people.
I'm translating all people as all people.
Well, stop doing that.
How can I discern your words if you're using all when all means all in the human language?
Forgive my exaggeration. Let me read another verse or two.
Right. And then we got to wrap it up here.
Okay. We're shattering the silence We're shouting in the quiet. You're not alone. None of us are out here on our own. I skipped around a little bit. But I think that's a really important part of anybody's story is at some point you have to say something.
Yeah.
You have to talk about what's really been happening in your head, in your heart, behind closed doors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I feel like I've grown a lot, even the last year, because, and maybe you can attest to this, but, you know, me just saying, you know, like the thoughts that are going through my head, I'm actually speaking to them out loud to you. And it's helping because I'm actually getting them out, because it's not me just, you know, because you get in the cycle of you're processing it, but then it keeps going. It loops and it loops and it loops and you can't, you know, fix it. But then once you kind of like speak it out loud to someone and like trying to process what you're going through, you know, that person can help you kind of understand what you're going through a little bit.
Well, saying it out loud somehow takes some of the poison out of it.
Yeah.
Like, there's been so many times that I thought, oh, I can't say this out loud. This is so bad. And then I say it out loud and I'm like, oh, that was fine.
Right.
That was fine.
Right. So, yeah. It was a good movie. Really enjoyed it. Like, one of the best kid movies I've watched in a while. Like, I think that one and Wild Robot have been, like, the two best like kids movies I've seen in the last year.
Wild Robot was really good.
We have to do a movie episode on that sometime, but yeah,
not as good as K-pop.
But I mean, I did like the music in it though. The music was really good and the animation was really good. But I mean, yeah, K-pop Demon Hunters, man, if you haven't seen it yet, oh, we just spoiled a lot of stuff for you. So.
That's right. Yes, we did. But you could still find out more.
Yeah, you could still watch it and enjoy it still. Mm-hmm. But our next movie that we're going to be talking about is we're going to be talking about a big dog that got bitten by a bat and ate a bunch of people. It's the Stephen King movie, Cujo. Mm-hmm. I'm excited because I actually read the book, and the book was better than the movie. I'm going to throw that out there. And there were some really profound things in the book that I want to talk about that the movie did not bring up, because, you know, it's a 6-hour, whatever, 10-hour book versus hour and a half movie. So obviously movies can't produce the same kind of in-depthness as book can. So anyways, thank you guys for listening.
And as my friend Anne Lamott always says, Earth is forgiveness school. You might as well start at the dinner table. That way, you can do this work in confidence.
I don't even know how to process that. Like my friend Blaine always says, after we get done with the movies, don't party too hard without me. What? Catch you guys later.
Bye-bye.
Whether it's at home or at the movie theater, Movie Night Apologetics exists
to show you the goodness of God in movies we watch.
I'm movie apologist Clark.
And I'm Bethany.
And this is Movie Night Apologetics.